Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
At last, and on a sunny, beautiful California day.
On a sunny, clear day.
Yes.
And you can know, see a clear
forever.
Day.
You can see
yes,
forever.
You
I
can.
Just said it. I spoiled
Did
it
you?
Before you
Did
asked
you?
Me. Yeah.
I'm used to it, Michael. I'm used to you mucking up my
Taking
timing.
Taking your thunder.
Oh, look at the time. We're out. Well, you got your weather back. We were all gray and gloomy, and I was loving every second of it.
Yeah.
And then you were just
it
like,
kind of puts
why
me
can't
in.
It decide?
Yeah.
Why can't the world decide?
You know, it's either you stay in bed on those kinds of days or you get up and work.
There's
of course,
a great,
we all have to get up and work.
There's
so.
A great Sophie Tucker joke about that, but I'm not going to share it. Cause
Please do.
No, I can't.
Please
do. I'll share it next week because I don't have it exactly right.
Oh,
and if
okay.
I'd be upset if I screwed
God
up for time.
God forbid.
All Let's right. thank our sponsors.
Indeed, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Nice. Thank you, guys.
Not at
and
all.
Paul, as you well know, we've got two of LA's most creative producers of the live arts in studio with us today, both with an offering of unique, enriching entertainment that is presented every few months as a special event.
That's right. She is the creator of the hit reading series Dirty Laundry Lit.
And he is a co-producer of the hugely popular music series A Little New Music.
Let's say hello to Natasha Dion.
And Peter Welkin.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Welcome. Welcome.
So,
it is. It's just synchronicity that
yes,
we would have
is.
These two on. We
Very
don't.
Much.
We don't do nearly this much planning to actually have this stuff happen
right, exactly.
intentionally.
Exactly.
This is just sort of you know as it happens.
Well, but, before we talk with Peter and Natasha, Paul, how was your week?
My week was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We went out for it was Monica's birthday yesterday. My lovely.
What is she
my
25
lovely,
now. 29.
She
20,
looks it.
Yeah,
yes.
I
well,
know.
You know how it is. It's just a matter of when you. When you only have a 3-year difference with your wife, but I age and she doesn't, it's really just a matter of how much of a perv I look like. Because I've always, you know, actually, in Los Angeles, you don't say that. I either look like a perv or I look like a producer, one of
there
the two.
Go.
I don't know what
they
But
they are the same thing.
They're the same thing. But,
well, it was sweet on your Facebook page. I noticed you wrote something similar as your annual gift to her.
That I'm aging on behalf of both of us. Yes,
yes. Exactly. And, yes, she is. She's tiny, little, and oh so smart.
You know what she did to me at a truck stop in
Wait a minute.
California?
Wait a minute.
This is true.
Okay.
If you drive from the if you drive on the 5 from LA to San Francisco, there's like one place to stop to eat, and that's Harris Ranch. And Harris Ranch is this giant cattle ranch that, you know, 100,000 head of cattle. You smell it about 15 miles before you reach it. And it's this huge truck stop with restaurants and steaks and all this stuff. And Monica and I were arguing in the car a little bit before we got to Harris Ranch.
I can't even imagine
in.
That.
A little bit, you know, just joking arguing.
Oh,
we don't argue that much.
Okay.
But enough to just for her to be a little perturbed with me.
Uh-huh.
And we were in Harris Ranch in the gift shop, and I'm the only one in the place whose wallet isn't chained to them, you know, because it's all truckers. And she turns to me out of nowhere, and she goes, "Mister, leave me alone. I'm only 16. And I'm like, "Monica, I'm going to be picking up my teeth like chiclets. By the time you explain to this guy that you're kidding," she's laughing. I'm like, "Yeah, funny.
Oh,
so she
goodness.
Has exploited it. How was your week?
You know, it was fine. It was actually kind of a catch-up week, but got out to see some theater, which we're going to talk about in our live arts calendar.
Violet. As did I.
Violet over there at the El Portel Theater, and you went to see Accomplice.
Accomplice,
at Theater 40.
Yes, with Alison Blanchard,
yeah.
among many others,
and,
who
and
know
Michael
from,
Taylor Gray.
Michael Taylor Gray,
yeah.
who actually was not able to do the performance that I was at.
Wow,
his understudy went in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He was not feeling well.
No, no. He's been working so much. He's so many different projects. I think he had a conflict with a booking and wasn't able to do it. So his understudy went in place of him.
Well, I can't wait to hear your
that was wonderful.
Your review of it. All right. Because it sounds fantastic.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah?
It's great.
So it's all good.
Yeah.
And what's coming up for you, Paul? Let's just touch upon some things that we haven't spoken about, which is your
film. August Osage County, I'm doing at the Will Geer Theatrical Botanicum out in there, which is, I never think I'm going to get that right, because it's such a mouthful. Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum, which is a beautiful outdoor amphitheater in Topanga. I don't know if either of you ever seen it.
It's awesome.
And I'm in that, and then start the UCLA gig, June 22nd.
Right. He's become a teacher.
Forming Young Minds at the UCLA Extension Campus, teaching fundamentals of acting. So I'm going to be there, we'll do my mirror exercises and all the other stuff, but it'll be a lot of fun.
Very, very cool.
And how about you?
For you. You know, I have a couple of assignments with Broadway World Television coming up, and I'm going to, I'm pretty excited about one, actually, with Sutton Foster. Who is appearing at the Broad Theater in Santa Monica in concert. And a new show coming up at the Pasadena Playhouse called Waterfall, which is a new musical with Emily Padgett. And I'm going to the Actors Fund Tony Awards to cover the live feed from New York of the Tony Awards on the 14th of June.
Oh, wow.
I think that's the date. Yeah, 14th of June. And it's cool. It's the only place in L.A. that gets it live. You know, and it's a big gala, and all these celebrities come, and dinner, and it's quite nice.
Is it gala or gala? I never know.
It depends on what part of the country you're from. Right. In Los Angeles, it would be gala.
It's a gala. A gala or a gala, yeah. Well, if you attend it and you have a red handkerchief in your back pocket, what is that? Wasn't that whole thing in the 80s?
Yes.
The whole
thing? I don't even know. What are you talking about?
Things like that, always. It always bothered me because I couldn't get it figured out, you know?
I am so nervous.
Let's introduce our guests, shall we?
Yes, we should. So our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a Los Angeles attorney, writer, and law professor. She's also an Emerging Voices Fellow with Penn Center USA, a nonprofit membership organization made up of writers that work west of the Mississippi. Additionally, she was named by LA Weekly as one of LA's most fascinating people. And as she comes into the home stretch of completing her latest endeavor, she will become a first-time author, making her debut in the literary market for Counterpoint Press during summer of 2016. But she's here today to talk about her ongoing hit reading series titled Dirty Laundry Lit and its latest incarnation, X, which will be presented Saturday, June 13th at the 7 p.m. at the Virgil in the heart of Hollywood. Please welcome Natasha Dion.
Natasha's here. She's back.
Hey.
She's back. Okay. I love Dirty Laundry Lit. And before we start talking about this, we're going to do a shout out to Mr. Jeff Ayers, whose schedule did not permit him to be here today with us, although it would have been crowded with the three of you. But he MCs these. Has he MC'd everyone?
Just about. Maybe there was one that he didn't do, but he's awesome every time.
And not to put you on the spot, but can you, the titles, the themes of them, how many have you done so far?
We've done probably about 16 or 17.
Oh, 16 or 17.
Yeah, so they range from clothing optional to terminal, so we cover like everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was there a particular inspiration or causal event for X, or is it something you could share or not?
Just 2014 was rough, and I was just like, you know, let's just burn that up, let's just keep moving. And so just coming into 2015 with something new and fresh and a lot of hope and all that.
The artwork is very provocative, the artwork for this particular incarnation of Dirty Laundry Lit. It's a burning bed.
Now, when you say the artwork, you're talking about the logo for the show?
Well, the poster. They have a different poster, poster, so promo piece. Yeah.
Whatever. Promotional
work. Yes. Yeah.
It's in a pretty cool space. The Virgil is a pretty cool bar.
Yeah, it's a really nice bar. It's right there on Santa Monica, and it's you know, they redid it. It used to be Little Temple, and then it became the Virgil, and it's just really nice and sort of underground, and it's kind of like a speakeasy. There's two bars, so it's really nice, and we just cram in there.
Shoulder to shoulder. So for our listeners, Natasha, that aren't as familiar with Dirty Laundry Lit, explain sort of what the whole vibe of the thing is and what people can experience when they go, how you find the performers and such.
Yeah, so it's like a concert, but it's literature. And usually when you think about a reading, especially for literature or poetry, you're not thinking about a party. Right. And so LA Weekly called it, you know, it's like a raucous, all-inclusive party, but for literature. So there's 200 people standing shoulder to shoulder, cheering for writers who are bearing their souls on our stage.
It's kind of like a rave.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, and I wanted to do something different, because when I kind of entered the literary scene, they were all the readings were at college, universities, or at bookstores. So, you know, you have that music. And I was like, this is
bongos, beatniks and snapping fingers.
Right. So I was just like, how can we be in L.A., in Hollywood? You know, because, you know, the East Coast, they have their way to do things, you know, but, you know, we're in L.A. Let's do it like L.A. does it. So it's a party. It's like a club. It's like, it's fun. There's music. There's a DJ on the stage. There's Jeff, who's written for Saturday Night Live. He's, you know, he has his own, and he's just amazing, and he just really brings it together.
It's impossible to have a low energy show if Jeff Ayers is your host.
Yeah.
Because Jeff is his own sort of, you know, force of nature, you know, and I've known him for years. So Jeff and I went to high school together. Wow. And then when Jeff went to college, the whole reason I chose SUNY at New Paltz was because I visited Jeff when he was going to school there, because I took a couple of years off after high school to make money, and I just stayed. I just stayed and enrolled. And no, he's an amazing talent. But the talents that you have for this one, for some of your writer readers, you mentioned this in a last visit, Natasha, but remind me and remind or inform our listeners, is it just you that pick the people that perform? It's no committee. It's just your decision.
It's pretty much my decision. Yeah. Okay. I just, you know, I'm looking for always diversity, because I think that when people come to visit our show, they should see somebody that looks like them or is covering something maybe the way they would, because not everybody is going to want to talk about, for instance, some of the harder issues like sex or death or whatever. Right. And some people are just mellow. So my goal is for people to walk in and say, you know, I belong. I belong here. I belong on that stage. I belong in the literary community, which is so, you know, it's so one way. And so really just trying to bring it in to say, yeah, you belong here. No matter where you come from, how your day was, you know, you belong here. There's somebody who represents you, if not this time, the next time.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And you craft it. It's almost like a narrative, the way you craft it. It's almost like showing my age here, but I think of it like an album side. Like we used to have an album side used to have just an arc to it. And that's got to be part of interesting part of the process for you. Like who's first, who follows who, and having that sort of temperature of the room.
Yeah, there's definitely a team, because even when I get them together, I'm thinking about the slate. How will they come together? How do they complement each other? So it's not all about one person. You know, nobody's particularly famous, you know, that's not why they're there. They're there because they're talented, right, and they can tell a good story. So really making it so they complement each other, so everyone can be celebrated, and you know why that person is there, even if that's not your style.
Right.
You know,
gotcha.
So.
When you choose these participants who are going to be doing the readings, do you, you know, meet with them first to get a sense of what they're going to do, or do you just know them well enough that you know that they can do this?
No, actually, I usually don't know them well. I'll know of them, because I always try to go first to people who are involved in the literary community and support them, you know, because there's the people that are working hard, you know, for everybody, and then there's the people that, you know, that things just happen. Right. So I'm always interested in people who are already going out there, just to give them, you know, I don't have a lot to give people, so I feel like if I can just give them a little boost, you know, that that makes it worthwhile for me.
And so some of the performers that we're going to that you're going to have this one, would you share them? So give
a shout out. Melanie Thorne. She has an incredible book that's out right now. F. Douglas Brown, Steph Cha, who's written three novels, Victor Vasquez, who's also an Emerging Voices Fellow, Tara Eisen, who has a book out, Tony Ann Johnson, who actually wrote the screenplay for Ruby Bridges, which won a bunch of awards. Yeah, and Art Curum, who I met at a reading at an open mic. I was like, who is this guy? He's like this amazing Indian guy who's just like, I'm not really a writer. I'm like, yes, you are, yeah. man. You're a writer. So, and then our guests are Tika Lark Fleming. She does the Black Girl Radio Show, and she's a poet. And, of course, Jeff Ayers, oh, wow. who is just...
No, a live music set, right?
Yes, there's live music with DJ Kazelle, who's spun everywhere. He's usually in Vegas, and he comes just for this.
Just for
he
this.
Loves literature. Yeah, he loves.
I want to make sure that people know how where this is happening, and we can't. There's no. It's sort of. It has this wonderful sort of. You mentioned speakeasy. It has sort of this underground feel to it. So there's no. There's no like call or go online. It's just $7 at the door. This is at the Virgil in Hollywood, which is 4519 Santa Monica Boulevard. Get there early to get in. You want to find out more, it's at dirtylaundrylit.com. That's dirtylaundrylit.com. We'll throw this information out
and
a couple more times.
Tickets are only $7.
$7. And yeah. if you're elderly, like me, get there early because the bar seating is very, very limited. So if you get there early, you can get in and sit at the bar. And unfortunately or fortunately, Monica and I are memorialized on their website sitting at the bar at a previous
right.
performance.
Sober.
So, what?
Sober.
I think it was early. Yeah, it was early. No, it is just, it's an absolute blast. And it is one of these things that it's a difficult thing to impart to someone that a reading, as you say, can have the energy that this thing does. But it is. It's like a literary rock concert and an absolute ball.
What inspired you, Natasha, to come up with this concept?
I had gone to a reading of a writer that I really admired, and when I went there, I got there early, and it was just, and I thought, okay, if I can get a spot, you know, because it's going to be packed, because she's amazing, and I remember there was only one other woman in this reading, and at the end, I said, that should never happen to a writer or any artist.
One other person in the viewing.
In the whole event.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, that should never happen to any artist who's spent so many years, and they've toiled over this thing 7 years or most novels, you know, 5, 7 years, and then nobody shows up for the party.
Right.
I said, I never want that to happen to any writer, so I wanted to start this and just try to get as many people as possible to celebrate. Even if you don't like that, right, just be there because they've done this thing, they've given everything for this, and I want it to be a celebration every time.
And especially when you consider how heroically lonely the act of writing is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that if there's some, because I hate writing. I write, but I don't enjoy it. I like having written.
Yeah.
You know, I like having the, and I love editing. I love moving the clay around, but getting the clay on the table is very, very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the thing. For these writers to have at the end of all this arduous work, this sort of really visceral reaction to their work is just, it's not really offered anywhere aside from you guys.
And how do you manage being so creative like this and also working as an attorney,
you know,
and writing a book?
You know, it's just two different outlets, like two different brains. And when you're at, because I do criminal defense work, so you're constantly telling stories of what happened that day, you know, and then also just creatively, it's just an outlet to just you know, let it all that anger, all that, if you just want to retell that story, you didn't like the way things went, it just gives you a place to tell it the way you wish it would have happened or whatever, yeah.
So now to thoroughly embarrass you, Natasha, I saw in the pictures,
I do this.
In some of the pictures from the last event, someone is handing you a big bouquet of roses because of some sort of announcement that they, and what, would you please share what that announcement was?
The announcement was that my book sold to Counterpoint Press. Yeah, Dan Smetanka, who's an amazing editor, he has edited one of my mentors, Todd Goldberg's book, Gangsterland, but... Oh. Just so many great books, and I was like, he was my dream editor, and I thought in a million years he wouldn't choose my book, which is about, you know, the South and, you know, the eve of the Civil War. And I was like, this isn't his sort of thing, Gangsterland versus these women, you know, battling, you know, struggling for survival in the South. And he said, yeah. And so I was crying the whole time. And I was like, I'm going to get up there and say how great Dan is. And then I'm just crying and crying. I was like, no. Yeah, so.
So is that out there now? Is that available for purchase, your book?
No, summer 2016.
Yeah.
So we have editing to do up until that time.
Okay.
And then, yeah, and then it goes from there. But summer 2016. Mm. And right
far
now,
along in
you'll have
process.
To let us know. Sir.
So I'm at the beginning of the process. Right. So I'm waiting for his notes to come back on any edits, and then I'll write and then send it back to him, and it kind of goes back and forth for the next few months. Right. And then it goes to copy editing, you know, all the typos and then covers.
But
and,
you've completed.
Yeah, it's all.
You've completed the book, yeah. As far as you're concerned.
Yeah.
And you've turned that in.
Yeah, I've turned that in. And right now it's called Sweet Tea and Honey, but it's going to change. The title's going to change.
Oh, okay.
by who's your standard or theirs?
It's, you know, it's both. He says, I don't think this really, my editor says, I don't know if this captures, you know, just sort of the epicness of this book, which covers, it spans 25 years. So something that really captures it. And it's
the
very,
scope of it.
Yeah, a lot of violent, you know, it's not your typical grilly book.
Well, that's just it. You could run the risk of thinking that Sweet Tea and Honey is sort of like a rhapsodic, you know, just sort of casual. I could see that.
Yeah, so it's something more that deals with the harsh realities that are in this book.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And now, how do you like this process of the editing and going back and forth? Do you like it, or is it like they're carving up your baby?
No. No, you know, it's different because I trust Dan. You know, it would be different if I didn't know who had it or whose hands were on it.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen. But I really, because I've seen his work and I've met him and I've, you know, I trust him with the baby. So,
okay.
So it's like, you know, it's okay. I'm waiting. I'm not good at waiting, but I trust this process.
Okay.
Yet.
Now, has it crossed your mind yet that once this book comes out, there's this opportunity, if it's successful, that it will become perhaps a motion picture or a television series?
Yeah, I would love for, you know, it started out as a screenplay when I first wrote it, and I went to the first meeting of the production house that wanted to produce it, and I was like, no, this isn't the story. Oh my gosh, I have to write it, I have to finish it, it has to be out there. That's how I started to write it as a novel. So, but it won like 8 screenplay awards for best screenplay, kind of all over. Yeah, but then when it got to the, you know, the big moment, I was like, I can't do it, I can't give it away. So this is totally different this time with Dan, because I'm like, okay, I trust this, and I've already, so far we've gotten, fingers crossed, knock on wood, all that, 2 studios that are interested in it, so they get it in October.
Well, I have some headshots in my bag.
Right.
I'll just give them to you right now.
Right.
Just get that out of the way.
You have to be one of the good guys.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. They're the good guys in the swim suit. Civil War.
I don't know. It's don't not know. Really. Yeah. I don't know.
It is the South.
It is the South. It's dirty.
Speaking of dirty, we're talking about Dirty Laundry Lit with Natasha Dionne. This is going to be Saturday, June 13th at 7 p.m. At the Virgil in Hollywood. That's 4519 Santa Monica Boulevard. $7 at the door. Can't do better.
Yeah.
Literally cannot do better with your entertainment dollar than $7 right there.
Absolutely. In a very eclectic, interesting group of people and on stage and in the venue itself.
Yeah.
No,
it's
something different.
Absolute blast.
Something
absolute blast.
Thank you.
We should go to our arts calendar,
Michael. Yes, we
should. And then we will speak to Peter shortly, who's been sitting here so patiently and kindly. Let me see. You want to do your review first?
I will. As I mentioned at the top of the show, folks, I had gone to the theater this past a week and took in a musical that has not been done out here on the West Coast, as far as I can recall. It was done in the 90s on Broadway, and it's called Violet, the musical, and it is based on the short story The Ugliest Pilgrim by Doris Betts. And it's set against a backdrop of the 1960s civil rights movement, and it follows the growth of a very bitter young woman, hideously scarred by her father during a woodcutting accident, and in her hopes, as the play continues, that a TV evangelist can actually cure her. She embarks on this journey by bus from North Carolina, her town in North Carolina, to Oklahoma, and along the way she meets a young black soldier who teaches her about beauty, love, and courage, and what it means to be an outsider. And that title role is played by Kristen Towers Rolls.
Hardest working woman in showbiz.
Yes, indeed. And the granddaughter of the great Catherine Grayson of MGM musical fame. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, I thought it was a pretty great tour de force for her as an actress. There's a lot of material there for her to deal with. And she did it very well. And happened to see it on a night when she wasn't feeling vocally 100%, but I would not have known that had she had not mentioned that after the show, because wow. she's always so present. And it's a very compelling evening of great performances. I would say that if I had my druthers, I'd like to have seen a little bit more flushed out on the book of the show. Okay. And the music, which certainly does coincide, with the book and tells the story, perhaps even more so, is not memorable. Well, or it wasn't for me, anyway. But what was definitely memorable were these performances, not only by Kristen, but all of her colleagues. And the style of music, you've got gospel, you've got rock, you've got country, you've got R&B. So it's a nice mix of that.
And yet, with all those styles, you still didn't think that there was anything you took home with him?
Not at all.
Really?
No, but I don't find that to be unusual in shows that have been written within the last 10 years or so, that aren't, big hit musicals. I find that that's probably one of the reasons why they don't gel with audiences.
Oh, because there's so many different styles.
Not because of the styles, but because you can't really remember anything once you leave the premises. And, there used to be a day when you would go to see The King and I or something on Broadway, and you'd be humming the six songs, in the car on the way home because they were so...
Right.
Written with those kinds of hooks and
kinds
of melodies that you just, lingered in your
right.
head.
Right.
But this is certainly worth anybody's time to go see. And I do want to say that Joshua Finkel, our friend, did a beautiful job of the direction, the sets and things of that nature that were kind of surrounding the show could have been, I think, a little more thoughtfully prepared for the production. It did not take away, once again, from the performances. The actors certainly stepped up to the plate. And Jamal, I'm going to say Bakare, it's B-A-K-A-R-E, plays Flick, the soldier. And Michael Spaziani as Monty, Jaden Young.
Spaziani is his name?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, there's a paisano.
Yeah, exactly. And a wonderful
Michael
actor.
Michael Spaziani.
Very interesting young man. He's from Boston, and he's new to Los Angeles. And he and the other gentleman, Jamal, were the two male leads in the show, and they really put it together. And Young Vi, Jaden Young, is what I said before, and Jason Chacon, Richard Lewis Warren, who is the brother of Leslie Ann Warren, sitting right in front of me, and I had a huge crush on her. Do you remember her?
Leslie Ann Warren, sure,
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I saw her profile and every reaction to the play, so I spent a little bit too much time looking at her.
Maybe that's why the songs weren't memorable.
Yeah, perhaps. Damn it, Paul. Anyhow, folks, it is playing through the 31st at the Monroe Forum Theater. I do suggest that you see it. It's something that's not done. This is only my opinion. You may have an entirely different opinion. I liked it for sure, so don't get me wrong. And for tickets, call 818-508-4200 and or visit the El Portal Theater's website, which is elportaltheater.com. It is an adult subject matter, and it does require that audiences, anyone under the age of 17 needs to be brought by a parent.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And you saw, sir.
I saw Accomplice at the, this was performed at the Ruben, it's Theater 40, but it's performed at the Ruben Cordova Theater in Beverly Hills High School. They have a theater right there on the high school. And that's the only thing that's high school about this production. It's just it happens to be there.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic production. This is sort of a hybrid of Noises Off and Death Trap. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great old school four-hander whodunit. And it's in an intimate, because it's in an intimate venue, you really sort of feel like you're there. And I would say that there are twists and turns. That would be the understatement of the year. There's no way in hell you're going to figure out who done it with this show, because it twists and turns like 15 corkscrews in a row. It was a wonderful production. Allison Blanchard, who I know from doing work with Sea Glass Theater here in town, she's a company member there, as am I, is pretty much, she's on stage about 95% of the time, but it's not like she's, I don't think she's carrying any more weight than any of the other performers.
Right.
It's very much an ensemble piece, and they're just, they really hit it out of the park. But much like having Allison here on the show to talk about it, I can't really talk too much about the show without giving anything away.
Right.
Except for the fact that you should go see it. So I think they're coming up on their final 2 or 3 weeks. This is at Theater 40, produced by Theater 40, as I said, at Ruben Cordova Theater. You can find out at theater40.org. Theater has the R-E spelling. And also for reservations, 310-364-0535. And I do want to call out this cast because they did such a great job across the board. This is Allison Blanchard, Alice Cutler, Richard Horowitz. And hopefully when you go to see it, you get to see Mr. Michael Taylor Gray, whose understudy performed it the night that I was there and did a great job. Unfortunately, I don't have his name in front of me here. But Michael and I spoke afterwards, and he's got, I mean, good for him. He's got so many plates spinning and so many things going on that he may actually miss another performance, but don't worry about it if you hear that announcement, because the guy who is taking over for him, which I will make a point of remembering his name the next time that we talk on our next show.
Good. Well, that sounds like a winner, because I understand that it literally is in the last just couple of minutes of the play when this is all figured out. The audience has
yes and no. But that's one of the twists. One of the primary twists is at the very end, but there's so many twists during Act Two that you lose track of the twists. Lose track of the twists.
Okay.
Toy boat. Red leather, yellow leather, good blood, bad blood. Born and raised in America's Dairyland. Our next guest, Peter, is ecstatic to have just written a musical set in and produced in Wisconsin. I wrote a show set in Wisconsin called Cheese Louise. Yes.
Oh.
He is a graduate of AMDA New York and currently serves as a producer, director, writer, and sight singing actor with new musicals Incorporated. His West Coast credits include the roles of Anatoly.
Mm-hmm.
Anatoly. Thanks, Michael. You always give these to me. Anatoly in Chess in Concert. George in Sunday in the Park with George. I got that one. And Musical Theater Guild's concert production of Titanic. He's an associate producer of the LA's Next Great Stage Star, now in its ninth year, as the only musical theater competition of its kind on the West Coast. His film projects include the shorts Singles Night, Mother's Day, and A Thing Called Happiness. But today, we're happy to have him here to discuss A Little New Music, a highly successful series of concerts for which he is co-producer. A Little New Music will be presented June 4th. At
3rd.
Toy boat. June 3rd at Rockwell Table and Stage in Los Feliz, California. Give it up for Mr. Peter Welkin.
Yeah. Hello,
thank
Peter.
You, thank you.
June 3rd.
Exactly.
So, Peter, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Natasha. Was there a, or I don't know if I asked her this one, this particular broadcast, but was there sort of a causal event for this, an inspiration to do this? Can you remember when that was? Or no?
To a degree, but I wasn't necessarily involved with the original inspiration of that. I kind of came on board as a co-producer when Christopher Makish and Luke Klipp kind of brought a few of us together through, at the time, Academy for New Musical Theater, but now New Musicals, Inc. in North Hollywood. They had this idea that they wanted to get some of the new material out there to an audience and make it fun and entertaining, instead of a little bit too maybe pedantic and a little educational, which is often what would happen with some of our presentations at the Academy for New Musical Theater. It tended to be a little bit more cerebral and more about the writing and what the work was all about.
A little too instructional.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. This was meant to be more just in fun, engaging, entertaining, getting this new material out there so that new audiences, you know, get inspired and listen to this stuff and go see these shows eventually when they get produced and that kind of thing. So.
Now, is the music that is presented, is it always from fully formed musicals, or sometimes do they have pieces that are sort of, as Tom Waits says, songs that fell behind the stove?
Indeed, yes. Yeah. They're actually, it's actually quite a combination of things. Some of these shows are more well thought out and fully written. Other ones are definitely still in the process of being developed. Okay. And actually, this time around, some of these songs some of them don't belong to a show yet. Many of them have come from our New Voices project over at New Musicals, Inc. as well. So some of those were suggested by some of the folks that were listening to some of that material and judging that and determining who the winners of the New Voices project were. So those were suggested to us in a way through our website. And so it's a, yeah, it can be anything. We're it's a pretty wide berth in that regard.
Okay. You know what I'm curious about, too, as a producer and as a creative person that you are, do you find that playing a song out of context, if it is from a musical and it's not being shared in its in that narrative, do you find that it helps or hurts the song? Because sometimes I feel that it can benefit a song tremendously if you don't know what has preceded it or what is to follow. And I'm curious about you in assembling that evening.
There are pros and cons on both sides of that. We find, I think we're tending to listen for songs that can stand on their own and don't need a lot of context. But at the same time, we have often found songs that we absolutely love from certain shows, but we feel like there is, you know, a certain piece of context that's absolutely necessary for the audience to actually grasp why this song is even, you know, in this show. So we kind of go back and forth about that. We will definitely provide the context when we feel like it's absolutely necessary. But many of the songs we try to find really can stand on their own and do just fine that way.
Okay. That was going to be my next question. Is there a spoken narrative through, or do the songs stand by themselves? Or
we have a host that basically strings everything together for us. Although in this case, we actually have two hosts. We're going to have co-hosts, Jordan Kai Burnett and Tony winner Daisy Egan is also going to join us for this one. They actually do a Sunday brunch of shame at Rockwell as well. So they have their own shtick that they do.
Okay, I know we're not promoting this, but Sunday brunch of shame.
I'm sure they'll appreciate the shout out. But yeah, they're going to be doing the hosting duties for our show this time around. But they're very funny together, and I think they're going to be great. So it's going to be a lot of fun that way.
Daisy is very fun. We've had her on the show.
Well, yeah, she is. She's a lovely girl and a mama. You know, she had a baby.
Yeah.
Peter, what is the percentage of shows that get produced from some of the songs that are not and have not? You know, are from the project and it's not been produced?
Ooh, wow, that's a good question. I'd say it's kind of hard to know, except for the ones that we know personally have, you know, moved on to the stage of production. I mean, in a way, it's not like we are trying to get anybody a production.
Oh, right.
But we, you know, hopefully, maybe there are ears out there that belong to producers that are, you know, get interested in these shows and actually want to take it to that level. I've heard people having those kind of discussions. Mm-hmm. You just never know. I don't know if I could put a number on that, really.
Yeah. Besides, you'd have to have that feedback, I guess, from the composers.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to find out from them after they've, you know, just any time, whether it's before or after, because those things happen, you know.
Well, I'd like to know, because I've actually written a musical that I would like to present.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
Okay.
And I just, if you're interested, I could sort of tell you about it.
I would love to hear about it.
It's called Cats. Yes, but it's spelled different.
It'll never work.
It's
K-A-T-Z.
Oh. Yes. And it takes place in a deli, and all of the different luncheon meats have their own songs.
Oh,
Sorry.
There you go.
I'm sorry. You were saying
one of the things that I always find interesting is songs, because I've been to your one of these events, and they're really great and fun to be at. And Rockwell is a beautiful, beautiful venue to see this type of entertainment in, or any type of entertainment that they're presenting. The publishing companies, you know, for television and motion pictures, I hope that, you know, that's really somebody that should be at this event, because so many of them purchase songs that are just, you know, specific to a series or a film, right, in a scene, right? 30 seconds of it or whatever, maybe even get a title song out of it.
Right.
But that happens a lot. And, you know, those publishing companies are always looking for this kind of music.
Not only that, but when do they get an opportunity to see the effect that a song has on a live audience without seeing a fully mounted production?
Exactly.
And it's a really sort of a great peek behind the curtain. Exactly. You know?
That, and there are so many crossover artists that that are writing for both stage and for film, television things. Either they become, you know, composers in the scoring sense, but some of them are writing actual, you know, real songs for films. And so we often have a lot of those kind of people. One of the examples right now is Michael Heitzman and Eileen Reed. I mean, they're Grammy nominated folks who write for all sorts of different kinds of things. But we're presenting one of their songs as well.
And now, did you reach out to them, or how did that happen?
You know, there are now 14 of us co-producers for this particular project, so I'm not exactly sure who had the contact with them, but we each kind of take responsibility for reaching out to various composers that we know or anybody who we may be connected to and say, hey, what have you working on? What's new? What's fresh? What do you
So that's largely say 14 producers on a project like this, that's what the drive is with each of these people, is finding this music and pulling it together.
Right.
And then there must be just a handful of you that coordinate the actual event.
Well,
or does everybody have a say?
We all kind of have a piece of it.
And you're still speaking to each other?
Right, I know.
That's my first thought. 14 producers.
You should hear the conversations we have when we sit down and listen to all, like this last one. We had 100 songs we had to slog through to figure out what we were going to do. And it was a long night with a lot of conversations.
Did you play them from beginning to end? Or do you know in the first 10 seconds?
Well, we give everybody a chance to listen to all the songs themselves on their own, and we have a little bit of a rating scale that we enter the information into, like a little survey, and then we kind of add up those scores, and then we bring it into this big meeting where we sit down and start talking about, okay, these are the obvious ones that everybody seemed to like and thinks, you know, are going to fit this next show, and then there's the whole bunch of stuff at the bottom that's like, ugh, we're probably not ever going to do this. But then, you know, we've got a bunch in the middle, and that's the chunk that, you know, makes us talk for hours about, oh, well, this song has this and that, and these people are connected to it, and oh, we could get this person to do it, and it takes hours to get through that part.
I think we're beginning to see why Natasha works alone.
Right. I'm kind of jealous right now. After hearing her process, I'm like, that's easier.
but all kidding aside, and I'm sure Michael would agree, that is a process I would love to sit in on. Just that the discussion generated from, you know, playing, you know, listening to different songs and weighing them against one another. I just find that really interesting.
It is. It's an exciting, you know, kind of creative moment in our own minds, I think, because we're all listening very carefully to figure out, okay, is this really a good song? Is it written well? Is it, you know, are the lyrics, you know, fresh and interesting and you know, good for a show like ours? And I mean, there's sometimes some fantastic songs that we just can't really choose for other reasons, or we think, you know, they're just not going to fit our format quite well enough, or they're going to be really too strange out of context, like I said before. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into figuring that out.
And there's also probably songs that, much like I'm sure this happens to you too, Natasha, there are probably songs that are victims of previous choices.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose something for earlier in the evening and you just know that you're going to do it, and then you find something later that's maybe a tad too similar in style or tone,
right?
You know, you're not going to, you want a varied evening.
Right.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with that second piece. It's just timing.
Yep,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you? How much time is taken away from your activity as a performer with this project? I mean, because this isn't your only project.
A little too much. Sometimes.
He's also a brainiac. He is a brainiac.
Is he?
Designs computer.
Well, we have a room full of brainiacs.
I know. Natasha and I are strangely similar. I think. We've got some very interesting commonalities here.
But, I mean, you get your performing in there? Do you pay attention to that? Because you're an amazing singer.
Thank you.
He really, truly is. He's headlined.
Well, maybe we could talk about cats then.
Oh, sure. Why not?
We're looking for an olive loaf right now.
Sorry. I speak olive oil.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you ever performed in any of these, Peter?
No. Well, yes. One time we needed some backup guys for a song from a show called Yo Vikings. So we actually got to be
Yo
Vikings.
Vikings.
Yes.
Is that
Vikings? Oh, okay. It was so we were doing backup for them. As producers, we've kind of stayed a little outside of that because we want to be careful about it not being a showcase of our our own personal interests.
Right, we try
to make it sure it's about the songs and it's about casting them to the best of our ability. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility that one of us producers might at one point sing one of them, but we've generally stayed out of that, and we also shoot for trying to have, you know, some names in there. I mean, Shoshana Bean has performed for us before, and Kevin Chamberlain, you know, people who've got some really amazing credits, and you know, we try to make sure it's you know, exciting
sounds
for the audience
like a blast.
As well.
Sounds like a blast. Natasha, you don't read your own work at the you have, but rarely, right?
Yeah, usually not for the same reasons. Yeah. You don't want it to be about you. It's really about all these people that you're celebrating that night. But if I, you know, if it comes up and you have to do it, then
right.
Yeah.
We should tell people how to see this, and of course they can go online to rockwell-la.com, or they can certainly call in for tickets at 323-661-6263. And again, this is Rockwell Table and Stage. It's located at 1714 North Vermont Avenue in Los Angeles. And any other inquiries, you can certainly go to the, or information that you'd like to find out about, maybe you're a songwriter and would like to get your piece of material to this organization, go to alittlenewmusic.org.
And also, did you say rockwell-la.com as well?
I did.
And we'll do one better, since this is their eighth incarnation of this.
The eighth person
to send us an email at stateofthearts.la@gmail.com. That's stateofthearts.la@gmail.com. The eighth email we receive, we'll get two free tickets to attend.
There you go.
Let's finish up this show so I can get online.
Okay.
Send that in.
Quick.
But you know what?
Come to that point now.
Before we get there, Michael, before we get that, just because we have so much to tell, I want to make sure that we get all of these things out one more time. Just these websites and phone numbers.
Sure.
So for Little New Music, it's 323-661-6263 or rockwell-la.com. The Dirty Laundry Lit information, that's at the Virgil in Hollywood, Saturday, June 13th, 7 p.m., 4519 Santa Monica Boulevard, $7 at the door, or dirtylaundrylit.com. Michael, you want to throw the Violet information
out there? It's continuing Violet at the El Portal Theater's Monroe Forum, which is a lovely 99-seater inside of the actual complex there. And it's Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 7. And it tickets are available at 818-508-4200 or going on to the website of kelrick.com/productions.org.
And for Accomplice, which is playing through June 14th, you can call them at 310-364-0535 for tickets, or online at theater has the RE spelling, theater40.org. Lots of parking right there, which is always important here in Los Angeles. It's that time.
Last
3.5 minutes of the show. Tale of woe, a tale of some embarrassment that happened during performance. Peter, your eyebrows just went up, so I'm picking on you first.
His face is completely flushed.
And Natasha's praying that he will talk for more than 3.5 minutes.
Yes.
Well, I think the capper for me was one time when I was, it was in college, actually, and I was doing Frederick in Pirates of Penzance. And there was a move where two of the other characters and I were rolling like backwards over ourselves, like somersault backwards kind of thing. And in the midst of that little somersault, my pants like split wide open underneath. Luckily, I was wearing underwear, so I didn't, you know.
I'm sorry.
Could have been a dance belt.
Just out of curiosity, are there a lot of times you perform without underwear that could have been a concern?
I don't know if I should answer that knowingly.
He's taking the fifth, though.
Natasha, do you have one for us? If you don't, it's no big deal.
I don't have a good one.
You don't have a good one?
I don't have a good one.
Oh, come on.
See, because most of mine happen when I'm asleep. Like, I can't go to sleep. So I'm like the one I was at Hollywood forever.
Okay.
I do. But I didn't, you know, it didn't happen. Okay, so I was dreaming that I had tripped and fell onto the stage.
Oh.
And I was like, and I kept having this dream and I couldn't sleep that night. And then the day of the reading at Hollywood Forever, I go up on stage and of course I trip and my shoes come off. And then all I could think about was a dream. I was like, just don't bite it. Just don't bite it. And then I was like trying to put my shoe back on and I was like, I left it. And then I picked them up and I just put them in the back. And then people were like clapping that I didn't.
See?
Yeah, so it worked out.
Dig that
it
even more.
It was like embarrassment. Yeah.
Always. I think Jeff told me this story. He said, always something happens on stage, always deal with it. And one of our college professors talked about dropping a pencil. And he said, well, you know, don't worry about it. Won't worry about it. Forgetting that it was a raked stage. And this pencil took about 5 minutes to roll down the stage. And the guy's performing and he's looking in the audience and all he sees is every single eye in that theater is waiting for that pencil to drop off the edge of the stage. So deal with it. Always deal with it. That's a lesson for our listeners today, Michael.
It's true.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Terrific to see you again, Natasha and Peter, as always.
So nice to have both of you here.
And Paul, thank you.
Always a pleasure, Michael.
See you on the radio.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.